Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the business stories when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated some 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents, and every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is being gathered and stored in a very reasoned and very logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, bank, insurance company, business, and industry is obtaining all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? And what do they want it for in the first place? Well, knowing how this information is being gathered, what information is being stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's the place to start. And I'll tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and just as private as you want to be. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. Again, you can call us at 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Well, some years ago, I was delivering a series of lectures at Heritage Inn, and an old man named A.J. Porth came up after one of my lectures and said, "Mr. Gordon, would you like me to explain checks to you?" Now, I didn't think that that was a challenge by any means, and I thought for a minute to myself, now, what can this old man tell me about checks that I don't already know? Well, he was 84, and he had solid white hair. And I remembered an old principle of law, or an old proverb from the Bible, that said, "Rise up before the hoary head." And he certainly had a hoary head, so I said, "Mr. Porth, I would be delighted, and I would be honored, if you would tell me what you know about checks." So I went into his office about 5:30, and I came out around 8:30. I was there 3 hours. And he told me the story about checks. The check, C-H. E-C-K, and the check, C-H-E-Q-U-E. And I thought, well, I have never heard this story before. This is brand new to me. If, I said to myself, if what this man says is true, we are all dead, D-E-D. Now, you know, I went to public school, and I learned how to write checks and pay my income tax and do all the things that other people do, but I never knew why it was that I endorsed the back of the check. There's a number down in the lower left-hand corner, kind of a big, long number back there, but I never had anybody explain to me what those numbers meant or what the code was. I could see the words "pay to the order of," but I didn't know what "pay to the order of" meant. And I could see that there was a code up here in the upper right-hand corner, but I didn't know what that code meant or why. And I didn't know how many people were involved in this check. We normally think of pay to the order of Joe and signed by Sam, but there's two other people, two other entities that are involved in this check. It's a four-party limited general partnership. It's a maritime contract. It's the most sophisticated form of maritime contract ever devised by the mind of man. You can fill it out in about 30 seconds, 60 seconds if you're slow, and it will be binding upon you and the other three parties to the agreement in an adhesion contract that has terms and conditions that you've never heard of. and probably couldn't find at high noon with a roadmap, both hands. So let's take a check. Why don't you go pick up your checkbook and bring one in, set it down in front of you, and we'll analyze this check, and I'll show you what this thing is and how it works and why it works that way. Then some years later, in order to demonstrate this, I actually took a check and cashed it at law without recourse to find out if all of the stories that AJ had said were true, and they not only were true, they work in spades. So not only did AJ show me what it was, I went out and demonstrated it right there in my own bank, and now I can report the results to you. Here's the way this works. You take your check, you set it out in front of you, and you'll notice that it's got your name, address, and phone number right up there in the upper left-hand corner. And it says Joe Sixpack, 2204 Jones Road, Wichita, Kansas, 67220, and it's got your phone number on there. There's room for the date. That's the date that this contract is going to be entered into, and we'll call it May 14th, 1933. This is the 475th contract that we've written out of this book. And right down below the 475, there's a number 40-54X/1011. And that identifies the bank that this is drawn on. It identifies the Union National Bank of Wichita, Kansas. Now, down in the lower left-hand corner, there's a long series of numbers. It starts off with a 1:11100540 1:0475 space 032 space 9409, and that identifies three of the four parties. It identifies you, Sam the banker, it identifies the Union National Bank, and it identifies the Federal Reserve branch that this bank is associated with. Then it's made out and paid to the order of Joe the Barber for $9. And then it's signed by Sam the banker. Sam the banker. So who are the people who are identified as participants in this transaction? All of which expect to get paid something for their time, effort, and energy here. Well, Sam the banker is the fellow who's making the checkout, and he's making it out to Joe the Barber. The Union National Bank is party number 3, and the Federal Reserve Bank is party number 4. All four of us expect to be making some profit and gain. We're all going to get something out of this contract, out of this agreement. So who's getting what? All right, first of all, Joe the Barber is doing his thing back here in 1933 in the heart of the Depression, and he gets about $4.50 under ordinary circumstances for doing these four services. That Sam the banker comes in and has just gotten a new job up in Chicago and says to Joe the Barber, I need a shave, a shampoo, a haircut, and a manicure. And I need it so right now so that I can catch the train at 1 o'clock this afternoon. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. And Joe says to himself, gee, it's going to take me 3 hours to perform all these services here for Sam. He has to send out for the manicurist. He has to prepare and shampoo, shave, and give a haircut. And he normally gets $4.50 for these services. Sam says, I need these services right now, and I'm willing to pay you a bonus. I will pay you double what I ordinarily pay, $4.50. I'll give you $9 for the services, but I have to be out of here by noon so I can catch the train. Now, Joe the Barber is being appealed to, and it's his lust and greed that's being appealed to most. So Joe says to himself, if I could perform these services and get $9 this morning, I could continue on this afternoon and make my usual $4.50 this afternoon doing haircuts, and my total for the day will be $13.50. Instead of making $9 today, I'll make $13.50. I'll make 50% more money if I'll deal in this negotiable instrument, if I'll deal in this check. Now, ordinarily, people would come in and pay with gold or silver coin. He would be dealing in property. But now the banker comes in and says, well, I'll give you my check, which is not money, but it's a claim on money, and a merchant's word is as good as gold. That's a principle of law that comes from the Hanseatic League of 1536. The merchants don't deal in gold. They deal in commercial paper, but you can redeem the commercial paper down at the bank for the gold. The reason that the merchants deal in paper is because we don't want to put the goods and the gold on the ship together, because if the ship sinks, we not only lose the goods, but we lose the gold. So the merchants would put the gold in the bank, and then they would write a check on the gold. If the ship sinks, we don't lose the gold, we just lose the goods. And when the goods arrive, we'll move the gold from one account to another account, and that way we can keep track of our accounts in the bank. It's a neat system. It's been working for years and years. But the opposite to that is called a freeman's word is gold. And the freeman does not deal in commercial paper. He deals in the substance. He actually takes the gold for the goods, and then he trades goods for goods, goods for goods, goods for gold, gold for goods, gold for silver, silver for gold, gold for goods, but he never moves out of the property. He always keeps physical possession of the property. The merchant doesn't have physical possession of the property. Sometimes the property is in transit. Sometimes the property is somewhere else. Sometimes the property gets lost. But when you show up with the property and the proper bill of lading, you can convert that to gold if you so desire, which is why a merchant's word is as good as gold. And if you can't trust your banker, who can you trust? Now, there's a little corollary story that I want to leave you with first, and that is the Harry Connick story. My daddy used to send me down to Harry Connick's Corner Grocery, and when he did, he would send me down with a 3x5 card, and on the card it would say, "Dear Harry, please give little Georgie a quart of milk and a loaf of bread." Harry would get the bread and milk, put it in the bag, take me over to the door, point to home, and say, "Now, little Georgie, you go right straight home, take this to your daddy." And I would walk out of the store, and this creates a legal question. Who owns the bread and milk when little Georgie leaves the store? Is it little Georgie who's in possession, Harry who hasn't been paid, or Daddy who has promised to pay someday? Now, if you'll remember, we've covered this story before, and the answer is it's Daddy owns it under the Uniform Code of Military, under the Uniform Commercial Code, which is an offshoot of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which is a branch off of the law merchant, the law of the merchants. A merchant's word is as good as gold. Now, Harry under the UCC alienated himself from his property, so he doesn't own it, but he has a claim that can be litigated, and he's entitled to get paid. He's entitled to get paid something, but he's never entitled to his bread and milk. Little Georgie is the agent. The agent can't own the bread and the milk. He's getting paid for the transit. That's why if it's on UPS or Greyhound Package Express, it doesn't belong to the bus company or UPS. They're the agent. It actually belongs to Daddy Gordon, who is not in possession and who has not paid for it yet. Now, he's discharged his obligation with a note. He's promised to pay. He's transferred the obligation to the obligee. And the obligee, hoping to make a profit off of the note, takes it subject to its disability pursuant to Stanek versus White. Now, you probably remember that part of the story. Now, Joe the barber has the check. Sam the banker has his services. And Sam goes down, gets on the train, and goes off to New York. Goes off to Chicago, rather, to take up his new job. Now, Joe the barber has the $9 check, but remember, Joe, being in private business, doesn't have a checking account, doesn't have a bank account, and so he needs to have a place to put the check. So as soon as his supplier, Bill the supplier, comes in, he endorses the back of the check. He puts a signature on the back of the check, and he gives it to Bill the supplier, who gives Joe the barber a case of Wild Root Cream Oil. This check has worked perfectly for Joe. He took the check in for the full $9 worth of value, and now he has traded the check off and received $9 worth of value in the form of the case of Wild Root Cream Oil. Now, Bill the supplier has the check, and he passes it on to Charlie the grocer, who gives Bill the supplier a case of Hunt's Ketchup, trades it for the full $9, and he receives goods in return. Now, Charlie the grocer has an ugly wife that he gives the check to and sends her down to Sally the beautician so that Sally can make his wife beautiful. So, indeed, Sally the beautician makes Charlie the grocer's wife beautiful by fixing her hair and giving her all of the services that she needs to make her beautiful and receives the check in full payment. Or she's discharged and she receives everything that she hoped for because she passes the check on to Ron the Roto-Rooter man who clears her drain, who passes it on to Harry the hardware man, who gives Ron the Roto-Rooter man hinges for his summer home. And Harry the hardware man passes it on to Paul the plumber. It then goes to Earl the electrician, Marvin the mechanic, Otto the office supplier, Frank the farmer, Jake the janitor, Joe the jeweler, Sam the saddle maker, Bob the butcher, Ralph the realtor, Hilda's hotel, Marty the mover, Tom the trucker, Perry the painter, Barry the builder, Phil the photographer, Peter the pizza man, Willie the woodsman, Percy the printer, Roger the refrigerator man, Dan's diner, Rob the roofer, Barney's beanery, and Barney passes it on to little Georgie Gordon for a book. Everybody has signed the back of the check. This isn't a two-party check. This is a 30-party check. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. After all, a $20 bill trades among 30 people very easily, doesn't it? It just passes on from person to person to person. Now, the difference between a bill and a check is the bill doesn't need to be endorsed, but the check does. The check is a credit instrument that once it's passed on and the guy signs the back of it, there's an important reason for the signature on the back of the check because it's a credit instrument. It has to have a guarantor. And the endorsee becomes the guarantor of the credit of the maker of the check. So let's test this and see if you know how this works. Let's suppose that you received a check for somebody and you deposited the check in the bank. You'll notice that the bank requires that you endorse it. Now, the check bounces. Where does the bank go to collect the funds from the check? Well, they go to you. They go to your account. They just take the money out of your account, send you a notice, and tell you, well, the check bounced. We'll send it back to you. And because the check bounced, we took the money out of your account. And after all, you guaranteed it. Now, they might not go so far as to tell you that you guaranteed it, but that's the legal effect of your endorsement, your signature on the check. And that's because when you accepted the check, you became a merchant. And a merchant's word is as good as gold. Now, I took the check, and I gave Barney's Beanery a book, and there's no room for me to sign the check on the back. And because there's no room for me to sign it and pass it on to the next holder in due course, I have to take it to the bank and cash it. So I take it over to the Union National Bank in Wichita, Kansas, and I present it for payment. And I say, well, my name is George Gordon, and I've taken this check for $9. And now I want to cash it. I want you to actually give me the $9 that Sam the banker, has in this bank. Now, the clerk, the teller, goes back and looks at the account and comes back and says, oh, I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Gordon. I have to inform you that Sam the banker closed his account. There isn't any money here in the bank, and therefore we will not cash your check. Notice, we will not cash your check. Well, I'm in possession of it. But it's really Sam the banker's check. It's Sam the banker's promise to pay. And it looks like his word is not as good as gold. And remember, last time we talked about Numbers chapter 30, what proceeds out of your mouth can't return again. This is a contract, and Sam the banker has reneged on the contract, so I need a legal remedy. And where there's a wrong, there has to be a remedy. So I need to sue somebody here. So I guess I should sue Sam the banker, who is the writer of the check, and closed his account and then took the $9 with him. But you know, as a matter of law, I don't have an action against Sam the banker, and that's because I didn't extend credit to Sam the banker. I extended credit to Barney's Beanery. Now, Barney signed the back of the check. His name is down there at the very bottom. Now, remember, a merchant's word is as good as gold, and Barney's Beanery, he said, if there's anything wrong with this check, I guarantee it. Well, we've got 30 people on here who have guaranteed this check. And I can go to Barney's Beanery and make him pay the whole $9. Barney can sue Rob the Roofer and make him pay the whole $9. Don's Diner, he can make Rob the Roofer or Roger the Refrigerator Man pay the full $9. That's because everybody on there has guaranteed it. Everybody on there that's endorsed this check is called a maritime underwriter. Now, do you remember how maritime underwriters work when we told you the story about the ship leaving Saudi Arabia, the Torrey Canyon, insured for $10 million? Lloyd's of London takes out the primary contract and issues it for $10 million and then divides the contract up for $1 million each to nine other underwriters or maritime underwriters. And when the ship sinks, nine of the underwriters, including Lloyd's of London, are insolvent and can't pay the damages. Who pays the damages? Well, each one of the underwriters, including you, agreed to pay $10 million, but the other underwriters have failed, and so joint and several liability apply. And because of joint and several liability, you owe the whole $100 million. Do you remember the story of the South Tucson, Arizona policeman who sued for $3.5 million and the city couldn't pay? They filed for bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy judge said, oh, no, you people have plenty of money. We'll sell your city hall, fire stations, police cars, and then we'll sell your public parks and all your public institutions here until we get the money. And if we don't have it, we'll go to the underwriters. That is, the citizens, the taxpayers, and we'll start selling their houses on the courtroom, on the courthouse steps until we have enough money to pay the damages. See how that works? Maritime underwriting, limited liability. It's called insurance. Now, most of you listening to me right now have insurance. You've got life insurance, car insurance, fire insurance, homeowner's insurance. I mean, you've got insurance on insurance on insurance. Do you really understand insurance law? Do you really understand maritime underwriting? Are you really sure that you want to be the maritime underwriter? Are you really sure that you want to guarantee the full faith and credit of the United States of America? Because as a taxpayer of the United States is on the verge of bankruptcy. And when the United States goes bankrupt, they are going to go to the taxpayers to get paid. And when they go to the taxpayers to get paid, you got joint and several liability. If needed, they can sue you and take the whole $14 trillion debt right out of your checking account. Now, I know you're sitting there saying, but I don't have $14 trillion in my account. Well, then go to Deuteronomy 28, verse 68, and read them and weep, as they say down at the Blue Room. Read them and weep. Because when the maritime underwriter can't pay, then we'll come in and we'll take his collateral. Now you're going to sit there and say, well, okay, go ahead and take my house. Go ahead and take my car. Go ahead and take all my collateral. Oh, are you really sure that you want us to come in here and take all your collateral? Because remember, under the Social Security account, you pledged all of your labor for all of your life, underwriter. I refer you again to block number 15 in the Social Security, statute. Remember Title 42, Section 301 through 335. Now, when you pledge all of your labor for all of your life, then we're going to come take you and put you through, or put a hole through your ear and sell you into bond servitude. Did you ever read that statute? You're going back to Egypt? Now, the United States of America can't pay its debts, and the people, that is, the maritime underwriters, the taxpayers, have guaranteed it. Now, listen, your representatives, those people that you elected and gave your power of attorney to, did you understand that when you vote, you're giving your power of attorney, your political power of attorney, you're giving to this representative who's going to go and act for you? Well, these representatives over there, they just voted out $29 trillion out of your account. And did you remember when you gave your power of attorney to your chauffeur, and now he's out writing checks on your account, and you just found out about it, and he's sending money off to Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and J.P. Morgan, and it makes you just mad as hell, doesn't it? And you're not going to take it any longer. So you're going to vote your chauffeur out of office, and you're going to replace your chauffeur with your butler. Bob, has it ever occurred to you that you need to take control of your own political account, that you need to be responsible for your own political destiny? I know it's a wild new concept, but I thought I'd throw it out there for you just in case. There are some far-reaching economic consequences to our actions here in America. We have been playing the part of the prodigal son for the last 100 years. And as a result of that, our servants, you know, our butcher, baker, candlestick maker, the cook, the butler, and the chauffeur, who we gave our power of attorney to, and they've been out spending, they've been out working on our farm and putting us in debt, and you and I have been at the party. We've been having a great time chasing the girls and pinching them on the butt over at the water cooler, but, Bob, meanwhile, those that have had our power of attorney for the last 100 years, and I may remind you, still have our power of attorney. Still have it. I know you're going to vote all the incumbents out, but I think you're too late. I think they've already spent you into bankruptcy, and now your creditors are going to come and take you, Bob, personally, live and direct, and sell you into slavery, also known as bond servitude. Well, read it for yourself. It's in Deuteronomy 28, verse 68. See what you make of that. Now, when Sam the banker walked out of Wichita, Kansas, remember, he walked out with the goods and services. He walked out with the full $9 worth of goods and services that he took right out of our community and went to Chicago with them. Our community is $9 short. We have $9 less labor, $9 less with which to buy, sell, and trade with than we had before Sam walked into Joe's barbershop at 9 a.m. Well, hang on. I'll give you the mid-course reminder, and then we'll come back, and we'll take a look at the costs that are associated with these checks. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact discs, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on the archives page and download it right there. That's georgegordon.org, archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views nor the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Joe the Barber in Business Stories. Now, the reason that stories are used in the Bible is because the story is the modality by which education is moved forward. God himself tells stories, you know, like the story about Saul and the witch of Endor, and he talks about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, and talks about Daniel and the lion's den, and so on. You know, and you remember these when you went to Sunday school. Now, the opposite to that is the memorization or the rote system. That's where we teach you the look-say method of reading. We're not going to teach you the code, the phonics code to reading. We're going to teach you to memorize these words. And every time you see one of these words, you'll know what that word means because you recognize it. Now, there's about 512,000 words in the English language. And if you're lucky, you will memorize about 10,000 of those. And so when you go to read, you can read every word that you have memorized. And all of the words that you've never seen before, you can't read. And this is why Johnny can't read, because he doesn't know the code. But to that student who has learned how the code works, which is called phonics, he can sound those words out. Because when he sees the word, he says, I know what an A sounds like. I know what an F sounds like. I know what G sounds like. Now, when we take a look here at law, I know what the ultimate outcome is going to be because I know what the principles of law are. And that's because I have a legal education, and my legal education came from the Bible. Now, God said that he wanted everybody to have a legal education, and the people have said, no, no, no. We will not have a legal education, but rather, we will have a liberal arts education. We will have a professional education. We will have a technical education, but by God, we're not going to have a legal education. Well, okay. As a result of that, we Americans, and I suspect that most of the rest of you around the world now, are legal illiterates, unable to understand the ramifications of our actions. But, boys and girls, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And in law, when you make decisions, they have consequences. And so, let's take a look at the consequences of this check. It has consequences, and 30 people here all endorsed the back of the check. So, let's take a look at the ramifications here. Each one of the people who have endorsed the check have said a merchant's word is as good as gold, and they've joined the law merchant. They now become commercial men. They've divorced themselves from property. And now they have an obligation because one of the merchants, Sam the banker, has reneged on his promise. That means that little Georgie Gordon ends up with the old maid, and I've been damaged, so I'm going to sue Barney's Beanery. And I'll collect my $9 from Barney's Beanery. But this is an equitable action, and it requires an equitable solution. So equity requires that I give everybody notice and opportunity to defend, notice and opportunity to correct the deficiency. So I write a letter to all 30 of you underwriters, all 30 of you partners in this maritime adventure, and I inform you that the ship has sank. And because the ship has sank, I'm looking for, the ship sunk, I'm looking for bottom rate. I want salvage out of this maritime adventure. So how much salvage is there? Well, there's all of these underwriters over here who are going to pay me for the lost cargo. So I say to each one of you, okay, each one of you pay me the prorated amount. That's 30 cents each. Now, let's presume that each one of you, all 30 of you, recognize that a merchant's word is as good as gold, and so you all forward me 30 cents each. Now, remember, I, too, am a maritime underwriter. So I have to pony up my 30 cents, too, don't I? And so when each one of us ponies up the amount that we owe, 30 cents each times 30 of us, that equals $9. And now I've been made whole. Now I can tear the check up and throw it away. But what kind of a loss are we faced with here? Well, first of all, Remember before the break, I said, well, Sam walked off with $9 worth of labor. He took 3 hours of labor from one of us, Joe the barber, and left with it. If he'd have walked out here with a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, we'd have one less motorcycle in the community to ride on. But since he took services, it's a whole lot easier to overlook it, isn't it? But he walked out of here with 3 hours. Now, all of us, 30 of us, had 8 hours, 8 times 30. We had 240 hours of trade, commerce, business, and industry that we were going to do that day. Sam the banker walked out with 3 hours of it and left us with 237 hours to share. That's why communists stand in line and share the shortage, because there aren't enough goods and services on the shelf for the amount of money that's in circulation, which is precisely what our president, Barack Obama, is doing. He is putting more money into circulation. Debt's our problem, and debt will be our salvation, he tells us. Well, I would say if debt is our problem and debt is our solution, then it would seem like to me that if we've got a $12 trillion national debt, doubling it to $24 trillion ought to be twice as good. It ought to give us twice the salvation in half the time. And I would suggest that we spend and go into $24 trillion worth of debt post-haste. What do you think of that? You know, when we actually listen to and then carry out in our minds, well, let's go do that and see what happens. Let's go test that, find out. It doesn't take you very long when you test it and find out to learn your lesson. When you spend your time memorizing the rote that's been funneled into your brain, you believe it, all right, but then when you go out and put it into practice and it doesn't work, you don't have a solution. You don't know what to do next. But that's not the only loss. Sam walked off with $9. Now, all of you have been deprived of 30 cents each. That's $9. But we got a bad signal into the economy. And when we got the bad signal, somebody walked into the barbershop while Joe the barber was giving the shave, shampoo, haircut, manicure here to Sam the banker and wanted to get a haircut. And Joe had to tell him, hey, I can't cut your hair today. You'll have to come back this afternoon because I'm busy. I'm tied up. I'm just swamped. And that sends the wrong signal to the economy. It says we're short of barbers. What we need are more barbers. We're standing in line here to get served at the barbershop. So somebody goes out and opens a barbershop, and now we've got two barbers in the community. We had one barber and 30 customers. Now we've got two barbers and 30 customers. That's 15 customers each. And about every 10 years, prices double. Have you ever noticed that? That's because these bad signals to the economy keeps misallocating our funds, and we keep building the wrong kinds of institutions. We've got a gigantic military-industrial complex, and we're building weapons faster and spending more money than all the rest of the nations of the world combined. But do we really need more nuclear weapons, more tanks, and more F-15 or F-16 Tomcats? You know, it would seem like to me that what we need is more garlic and more peas and beans and carrots and cars and more of the things that people really want to buy rather than the things that our government wants us to buy. Now, your government takes your money and spends it on an F-15. If we left that money in your pocket, would you have gone out and bought an F-15? Or would you have gone out and maybe bought a new Toyota, or maybe bought a new Chevrolet, or, you know, maybe put a swimming pool in the backyard? So central planners in Washington are deciding what it is that you want to buy, and what they're deciding that you want to buy is bonds from Greece or stock from General Motors. I really didn't want to buy any stock in General Motors. I really personally didn't want to own any part of Chrysler. My president said, no, it's necessary. We've got to bail the economy out, so I'm going to spend your money, Mr. Gordon, on Chrysler and General Motors stock. And by the way, while I'm at it, I'm going to, as our share of the International Monetary Fund, I'm going to buy some Greek bonds for your old age and retirement. And I said, well, thank you very much, Mr. President. I really appreciate that. My president's just thinking of me all the time, isn't he? All right, now we lost $9.9 and $4.50. So our economy over here is poorer to the tune of $22.50. Boys and girls. If that was the only cost in this transaction, we would be in Fat City. Yeah, we would be poorer 3 hours of labor that Sam took to Chicago with him. Yeah, we would be poorer the $9 that we all had to pony up to make up the loss, which is what the income tax is. And yes, we would all be poorer by $4.50 because now prices of haircuts have doubled. And now these services are going to cost us what Sam the banker paid and inflated the currency to. And yeah, that would be a loss of $22.50, but it's worse than that. You see, when we signed the back of the check, remember what happened at Harry Connick's? The guy that issues the check becomes the owner of the goods. Yeah, Sam the banker, he signed the check and you walked out of here, he becomes the owner of the shave, the shampoo, the haircut, and the manicure. And you say, well, of course, you know, because it's his hair that we cut. Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Bob, you're wearing a pair of glasses there. Hey, Sam, you're wearing a shirt. Tom, and you've got a belt on. Let me ask you, boys, who owns your glasses, your shirt, and your belt? No, I hear you. I own my belt. I own my glasses. I own my shirt. How'd you pay for them? Well, I went in with a $20 bill, and I bought it at White Front. I went into Walmart, and I paid for it with my credit card. Oh, I went into Best Buy, and I paid for it with my check. Oh, you discharged the obligation with a check, a credit card, or a Federal Reserve note. You paid for it with Daddy's note, remember? Daddy's note? Who owns the goods? When little Georgie leaves the store, when you left the store, you're the agent in possession. Who owns the belt, the shirt, and the glasses? Tom? Bill? Harry? You know, I send you to school, I buy you books, you eat the covers, and you don't learn nothing. All right, children. So the Federal Reserve ends up owning the shirt, the belt, and the glasses. It is true you're in possession. It is true you're reading with the glasses. You're holding your pants up with the belt, and you're keeping the sun off your back with the shirt. That's true. Now, do you remember the story I told you about the man knocking on my door, and he said he wanted to come in? He is a personal property tax assessor, wanted to come in and assess my personal property, wanted to come in, look in my dresser, count my socks, belt, shirts, glasses, and then have me pay rent on them because they weren't mine, because they belonged to the Federal Reserve, and he's acting as the agent of his master, like little Georgie Gordon, acting as the agent of his master, carrying the bread and milk home. You see, boys and girls, when we don't practice hard money, gold and silver coin, we can't pay our debts. We can't own the glasses. We can't own the shirt. We can't own the belt. We discharge the obligation in equity. Remember, under Stanek versus White, there's a clear distinction between a debt discharged and a debt paid. When a discharged debt is discharged, it continues to exist, even though it has been divested of its character as a legal obligation during the operation of the discharge. Something of the original vitality of the debt continues to exist, which may be transferred. Yes, you can transfer the $20 bill to Walmart, even though the transferee, Walmart, takes it subject to the disability incident to the discharge, the fact that it carries something which may be a consideration for a new promise to pay. That is an endorsement that says, I'm a maritime underwriter, I'll guarantee it with you, so as to make an otherwise worthless promise a legal obligation. That's a legal obligation, that check. You endorsed it. By God, if we need to, we'll come take it out of your account. Now, I told you the story, remember, of the Seventh-day Adventist over in Tulsa, Oklahoma? Went over and took a look at the church charter. It has a clause right there in the contract. Makes the people of the church, that is the church parishioners, the members, guarantors. Guarantors of the church debt. They're all underwriters. That's what a check is. It's a maritime contract for maritime underwriters. Boys and girls, there's consequences to our actions. God was not whistling Dixie through a straw hat when he said, I don't want you people dealing in unjust weights and balances, and I don't want you dealing in interest and usury. Don't do that. That's a mistake. Now, of course, we figured God had made a mistake there, and he needed to be corrected. And we got busy, and we corrected his mistake and sent Arlen Specter to the Senate, remember? Well, I noticed you people there in Pennsylvania withdrew your support from Arlen. He'd been there for 30 years. The damage that Mr. Specter did over the past 30 years, it's irretrievable now. It wasn't just Arlen that did it. Ted Kennedy had a part. And there's a lot of senators and representatives and presidents in the past that all had a part in the demise of the United States of America. They're not the only ones, but they're right up there in the forefront, aren't they? I mean, we gave them our power of attorney. By God, they used it. They went out there and sped us into bankruptcy. Now, we've had a great party. You know, since 1913, this has got to be one of the best shindigs that mankind's ever put on. I mean, we have had a blast. But, you know, the party's over, the sun's coming up, and reality is just around the corner. And boys and girls, we need a solution. And I don't think we're going to get a solution. I don't think we're going to get it from our president. I'm not sure that Barack Obama is up to the task of solving the problem for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. Now, I'm sure that Mr. Obama can take care of Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, and Bank of America. He has done a wonderful job. George Bush got right in there, right up front, and said, hey, I'm here to save, I'm here to help, I'm here to do what I can for Wall Street, I'm here to do what I can for the financial institutions of America, and he did. Bill Clinton, he was right there for all the financial institutions and big business and corporations, and he stood for big government. Let's have a little bit more of world trade. Let's export some more steel mills to China. Let's send some more of our shoe factories over to Taiwan. Let's send some more of our business over to the Philippines. They've all had a part in it. I'm not sitting here picking out Republicans and Democrats. I'm just sitting here telling you, you gave these people your power of attorney, and there's a legal consequence that goes along with it. And that's the story of Joe the Barber. That's the story of the check. When I walked out of A.J. Porth's office, I said, oh, my God, if what this man just told me is true, we're all dead men. We've all had it. This game's over. It's like playing a game of chess. You know, you're playing a game of chess, and suddenly your trained eye takes a look three moves ahead, and you say to yourself, this game's over. Sure, I'm going to move my queen over here and save her. But when I do that, I'm going to lose this rook. And when I lose that rook, the next move with that knight puts me in checkmate. I've got three moves, and the game's over. I could resign right now, which is the logical thing to do at this point in time. Chess players, when they look at the board, will oftentimes say, I concede. And the layperson looks over there and says, why is he giving up? The game isn't over. I can see several moves that he can make. But a trained eye on the board looks at it three jumps ahead and says, okay, yes, I can make three moves, but it's futile. From this point on, I can't win. And I'm here to tell you, boys and girls, from this point on, you can't pay your debt. It's all over. Oh, we're still making moves. Our president and our Congress is telling us that there's green shoots out there and the economy is going to recover. I'm looking ahead three moves. And then I'm just telling you that in the final analysis, game over. All right, that's the bad news. Tomorrow we'll talk about here's what we're going to do to solve it. But meanwhile, I've got to remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website,